Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show for Saturday, February 18th, 2006. I'm Harley Schlanger. I'll be your host today. And hopefully no one will be shot by Vice President Dick Cheney during our show. And I want to start with this disclaimer. No defenseless quail have been killed before this show, at least by participants on this show, at least today, as far as I know. Now, we have a very interesting situation overall shaping up. Lyndon LaRouche has issued a new paper. It's Franklin Roosevelt's Legacy, a Prolegomena for a Party Platform. And it essentially is, once again, Lyndon LaRouche taking leadership prior to his webcast this next Thursday, February 23rd, to put forward an approach to the economic crisis, the political crisis, but essentially the leadership crisis, which we see in the country. And so we'll be discussing that on the show today, but let's just start for a moment by looking at the overall situation that we face. Dick Cheney, also known as Deadeye Dick, has made himself into a laughingstock with the shooting of a friend on the Armstrong Ranch last Saturday. Of course, people didn't know about it till Sunday because there was an 18-hour gap between the shooting and the reporting. But what became an issue was not just the shooting, but his subsequent lying. We have a new article for the next issue of the EIR from Jeffrey Steinberg, Cheney, caught in the act of being himself. And what's really underlying this is that Cheney has been pursuing a presidential dictatorship as part of an empire in a long war. And to pursue this, he has been a pathological liar. We've traced this back now to the 70s. Apparently, he's been a pathological liar long before that. But as vice president, he lied about the pre-Iraq war intelligence, the so-called weapons of mass destruction. He lied about his role in the Plaim affair. In promoting torture, he lied about the right of the president to order that. The illegal spying through the National Security Agency, more lies. Katrina, more lies. And now he's lying about whether he drank a beer or a Dr. Pepper before he nearly whacked a Republican attorney. The fact that he's a laughingstock should help us, but he has to go. Now, the second question that comes up once we ask that first one is, what do we do once we get rid of Cheney and clean the administration out? And if Bush has to go, Cheney can take his puppet with him. But we're facing a global financial collapse. That's what's behind the war drive of Cheney. That's what's behind the volatility in the raw material markets. That's what's behind the shutting down of U.S. industry. And their policy is to go with a global fascist economic policy. Now, the point is that we've had the wrong economic policies for the last 40 years, with the efforts being made by the synarchist bankers of London and Wall Street to obliterate the American system, including our Constitution, including the policies of Franklin Roosevelt. Now, with us today to discuss this is EIR economic researcher and analyst John Hoeffel. John has been working for years on tracking the aristocratic clowns who are committed to imposing this global fascist order. And recently, as part of his work with the EIR, John has been involved in the project launched by Lyndon LaRouche to animate the economy, to use animations to give us insights into the actual physical processes and also to show, ironically, what the effects have been of the last 35 to 40 years of post-industrial society. We'll also have two members of the LaRouche Youth Movement with us, Megan Roulard from Boston and Leona Fanchang from Los Angeles, both of who recently were in Leesburg to do some work on the animations. And they worked there with John, with Bruce Director and Marsha Mary Baker. So we'll be hearing from them as well. Now, let me just tell you, if you have some questions, the email address is radio@larouchepub.com, LaRouchePub.com. We hope we'll get some questions generated. So, John, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's begin with Deadeye Dick and the Armstrong Ranch. What do you make of this unfolding event? And you have a somewhat unique perspective on it. I often call you the discoverer of the King Ranch.
That's right. There was this million-acre ranch in South Texas, and I found it. Well, it's very interesting. I think that several things stick out. One is the fact that the King Ranch and the people at the King Ranch far outrank Dick Cheney. That take the case of Ann Armstrong, who is one of the creators of the Texas Republican Party, one of the creators of both Presidents Bush, and also a member of the board of Halliburton and a longtime head of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, where she was involved in running intelligence operations against the LaRouche Organization. And as her daughter, Catherine Armstrong, who is the woman most quoted as the eyewitness in this, told the press that she, her mother, and her sister sat at their breakfast table on Sunday morning and decided to disclose to the press this shooting incident. Dick Cheney didn't decide to do it. Carl Rove didn't decide to do it. Ann Armstrong and the King Ranch, the controller level, decided to do it. And I think that says a great deal about how the power flows here.
Mm-hmm.
The King Ranch is basically a Venetian intelligence outpost and has been ever since the days it was created.
So it's a Venetian intelligence outpost with some cows and other wildlife.
Yeah, for amusement.
Yeah.
But it's the whole history of this, the way in which this ranch, which is it's a synarchist operation, which is created a lot of this synarchist, the neocon stuff that you see growing up in Texas, that these people had a lot to do working with Lazard and Schlumberger, the Rothschilds, the synarchist financiers, the oil cartel operations in Texas. All of these things are what created this nest of operatives that came out of Texas, which has infected so much of the Republican Party. And so I think that when this event happens, that the women sitting at the breakfast table decide Dick Cheney's future. That's quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand there's a rumor going around Texas that the quail are laughing at the vice president.
Well, pretty much everybody is. These quail, now, according to some reports, the way the hunt works at the Armstrong Ranch for people who aren't really hunters but just want to shoot something, is that you have pin-raised quail. Their wings are cut so that they can't really fly away very far. And, you drive up in a car, you get out of the car, you shoot a quail, you get back in your car. And this is what passes for a sport.
And, John, in your experience, do these cars have refrigerators with vast quantities of alcoholic beverages in them?
Well, the cars don't generally have the refrigerators. That's generally a truck that follows behind. they have their own beer truck. The delay, Cheney's delay in reporting this was, you got to be fair to the guy. He just wanted to have time to give a sober account of events.
Uh-huh. All right, well, I'm sure we'll come back to the vice president and his mishap during the course of the show, but I'd like to move on now to this platform that Lyndon LaRouche has just drafted, or at least the opening to it. What is the importance of the work on animations in educating people about economics? And in asking this question, what Lynn has been emphasizing in recent papers, including the Connect the Dots paper, and also his paper on capitalizing the economy, that he's been talking about the fact that because of the effects of the last 30 to 40 years, very few people in the United States understand that an economy is about physical production of goods and they think there's an intrinsic value in money and financial paper, and that one of the most important things that we have to do is educate people to understand what an economy is about, why the government must play a role, why regulation is key. So with that little bit of an introduction, how do we use the work on animations to carry out this process of necessary process of education?
Well, the reason why people are susceptible to the brainwashing of the bankers about how economies work, the reason why they basically have come to identify with the fleas rather than the dog, is because there is no real education in economy anymore in this country. And all the economics classes are about money, the manipulation of money. The bankers put out reams of propaganda about how it is the invisible hand, the role of the markets in setting prices and all of this. And if you believe all of this, you think that the markets are what make the economy run.
John, in fact, I was just reviewing for a class I did in Seattle this last week some of the writings of Milton Friedman, who's a key conspirator in this criminal, lawless gang. And Friedman was associated with this idea called the efficient market hypothesis, which actually goes back to the equilibrium theory of the discredited alchemist Sir Isaac Newton, in arguing that it's all about the information about paper flows. So it really does come down to this idea of markets being the masters of the universe.
And this is all this itself is just a front, because it underneath that lies what Bernard Mandeville identified in the Fable of the Bees as that it's private vices, public good. That if you take what you want, and if everybody operates in their self-interest in the law of the jungle, in which the strong eat the weak, that ultimately society benefits, that's the best, if Leibniz will pardon me, that's the best of all possible worlds. It's the law of the jungle. And what Lynn is a city builder. And the city builders move into the jungle, they clear it out, they build structures, and the law of the jungle no longer applies. That what sets us apart from the beast is our ability to use the power of reason to understand and help develop the universe. That the problems we have with the economy are in our mind, and the solutions in our mind too. And so the whole idea is to get people to realize this, to stop and think and rethink everything they think they know about economics, so that they can understand why, not just why we need to keep jobs here, but why it's crucial that we have industry. Mm-hmm. Why it's crucial that we produce enough in this country to produce a surplus to fund healthcare and education and infrastructure and all of the building blocks which help lift up a society, because the stronger the society, the better the condition. The whole idea is to create a new generation of minds, that each generation of mind is of a higher quality than the generation before it.
So, John, you don't buy into this theory that Cheney was really toying with the new Social Security policy of taking out people who are over 75 years old and shooting them?
Well, I don't think he thinks about it that deeply. I think he just, he's been under attack lately, and he needed to release some tension. And the way a good old boy can release some tension is just to go out and shoot somebody.
All right, well, let me bring in Megan Roulard from Boston. Megan, you just spent, I guess, about 8 or 10 days in Leesburg working on the animation process. What did you learn from the work you did in Leesburg with the team you worked on?
Well, I remember initially when LaRouche called for these animations to be done, the idea was that this was going to be part of our mass political organizing, and that, number one, we did need to get people to think about the economy and money from the standpoint of what the physical effects of the financial policies have been. So we've done a certain amount of that, but you know, knowing LaRouche, he's challenging us and the group of us who are there to do even more, which is to actually provoke, you know, as I guess as Kepler would say, to sort of provoke a sense of wonder at what's actually causing even a physical phenomenon going on in the economy. For example, I was looking at the collapse of agriculture since the late 1960s. Because what LaRouche is saying is what we need right now is we actually need the Democratic Party, for example, to figure out not just what's been wrong about what free trade has done, but they've got to actually develop a positive concept of what to do. So, I mean, one major animation that LaRouche has called to be done that I was working on part of was actually looking at animating the entire process of development of the United States since the Massachusetts Bay Colony.
All right. Now, let me, for people who are listening and don't know what you mean by animating that process, mm-hmm. and ask you a question on that, but let me just remind people you're listening to The LaRouche Show. This is Harley Schlanger. My guests today are John Hofel, Megan Roulard, and Leona Fancheng. And we're discussing how it is we change the thinking of people. Actually, I wouldn't say change the thinking, get people to think about economics as a process that comes from the human creative mind. Now, you just threw out something that is quite a provocative challenge of recreating the construction of the United States from, I guess, the 1680s with the Massachusetts Bay Colony.
Yeah.
What does that entail, Megan?
Well, I think this what you said, the idea of actually constructing this for people, because LaRouche said, look, the Democratic Party, yes, we need to return to the policies of Roosevelt, but you got to look at what Roosevelt did as something that was a certain application of lawful principles developed by Hamilton and even people before him, and actually show through looking at a process of you know, 300 years, a proof of principle that's gone back to how the nation was actually developed. When you had Bernard Mandeville and these guys who were trying to stop it. But
how do you show that with an animation? What goes into the animation?
Yeah, well, one thing that we were looking at, and I think this is one thing that you've got to do, for example, is because LaRouche said showing sort of something similar to time-lapse photography, the tendency is that, you know, the person's looking at this, the tendency is to sort of, you know, regardless of what sorts of anomalies you have, to connect the dots, to look at it as part of one sort of continuous process. And I think the challenge is figuring out what sorts of things, what sorts of studies, because there's all sorts of things you can do, to counterpose, to get somebody to think that what's going on here must be the result of a different sort of intention, policy intention, and trying to counterpose different things. I mean, I did some work. I was trying to look at, I was looking at, for example, globalization, looking at over a process of 25 years, the fact that you've had in a country like Mexico, you've had tremendous increase in the production of food, which sounds like a good thing, but at the same time, the population as a whole, you've had an increase in malnourishment. So you sort of have there's sort of something going on there where you say, well, those two things shouldn't seem to go together. So, I mean, those are some of the ways that. Some of the things I think we have to try and some of the things we want people to think about. Yeah, I would say that.
All right, and let me bring in Leona from Los Angeles. Hi, Leona.
Hi.
You've been working for quite a while with what's called the Curvature Group, looking at the papers of especially Carl Friedrich Gauss and Bernhard Riemann, the curved surfaces, the fundamental theorem, which is a core part of the curriculum for the LIM. How does that relate to what you were doing when you went up to participate in the animations work?
Well, essentially, some of these things, as far as what Megan mentioned, I mean, we are dealing with it, facts, essentially. We're dealing with data. You know, all you can really get is, okay, yes, you have the decrease in nutrition, you have a decrease in productivity, and things like this. But what you're dealing with in the economy as a whole is a very complicated process, with a lot of different variables involved. But each of the variables are self-reflexive, you could say. I take something like rail. Like, how do you judge the value of rail? Right? If you had an Egyptian society, for example, where there's no steel, no coal involved, and that stuff, how valuable is your rail? As opposed to now, where we had a certain production of steel, we have crops being grown in the Midwest and the middle regions, and you're breaking down your railroad system. And so some of this stuff we have to really start to understand from a higher standpoint. And I mean, so far the only thing we've been able to do is to use these discrete kind of chunks to pose the question, at least, right? To pose what is governing this whole process that we're not going to be able to see. And for example, I mean, you're not going to be able to see it directly, at least. You're not going to be able to illustrate directly Roosevelt's intention by showing how much electricity was used and all this other and different variables. But the question now is, how do we show, for example, essentially a revolution, where LaRouche has said that the defining aspect of a revolution is a shift in the way that mankind sees itself.
Mm-hmm.
How do you show that?
Well, on the negative side, all you have to do is look at people walking in the Santa Monica Promenade to see that they don't think too much of themselves by the way they dress and behave. So how do you show that then? This is obviously the one of the tricky parts of taking something from the unseen. I mean, you're doing some work now on Kepler. What's the analogy with the work from Kepler?
Well, I mean, Kepler's dealing with something very similar, right? He takes Tycho Brahe's data, which is just pure data from the visible domain, and he just plots it out by degrees. But the question he's posing is what Legan brought up earlier, is not, well, how can I describe how this plant is growing when you're looking at this animation or video, but rather, what about life is causing this to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Right, similar to the way that Kepler actually responds to this challenge. What about the universe allows us, or is shaped in a way that allows us to discover it?
Hmm. Well, that's interesting.
So that's... Hmm?
Now, there's a lot more to be said on this, but John, we do have an email that came in that I think is one you should take. It's from Santiago Hilaret, and the question is, hi, John. Two major dangers that LaRouche has been warning about for some time are the debt bubble trap, to be triggered when people are at their most complacent by a sudden upsurge in interest rates, and the hyperinflationary blowout. Can we look forward for something in the form of an animation to better expose these dangers, as well as to update the citizenry on their progression?
All right. Hi, Santiago. Thanks for the question. Right now, we're doing physical economy. I would like to get to the point where we have enough people involved in animations, we're producing enough that we can take on some of these other questions. But at the moment, you know, the physical economy is what we're focusing on. So I would say that, you know, at this point, you may see the blowout before you see our animation on it.
Well, John, let me ask you, because both Megan and Leona brought up this question of data. And I know we're digging around, looking at figures and trying to pull it together, but how do you know whether you can trust the data? We know that the Bureau of Lies and Statistics, also known as the Bureau of Labor Statistics, has been transmitting doctored reports for quite a while. So how do you know what you're dealing with?
Well, to the question of how do you know if you can trust the data, that's easy. The answer is no. All right, so that's not a question anymore. The problem is, to give you an idea of, I wanted to do, as the part of an animation on the Midwest, a comprehensive job profile of the Midwest over the last couple of decades. And so I grabbed all the data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And in looking at it, I found out that they have this policy where if it might reveal some sort of proprietary corporate information, they will zero out the data on a particular job classification for a county. They just don't report it. And out of 9 billion records of Midwest employment data, I found that 5 million of them have been zeroed out. So that data, what's left is completely useless. You can't do what I wanted to do. You can't put together a picture. So that's the first problem. You have a lot of data is withheld. The second problem is that they periodically shift the way they calculate things, such as with the implementation of NAFTA, we went to a new type of categorizing jobs, which had the effect of creating a whole bunch of new manufacturing jobs which didn't exist before. Now, this came out at about the same time that the president's, the economic report of the president ruminated publicly about perhaps we should consider McDonald's a manufacturing job since you're actually assembling a hamburger on a job site.
Well, John, we'll get back to this in a moment because I'm not sure whether we can really classify McDonald's as food or other kinds of matter. We have to take a short station break. This is the LaRouche Show. We're live every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can also pick up the LaRouche Show from the Internet. The archived shows, this show will be on by the end of this afternoon, past shows where we've had Lyndon LaRouche and other leading figures involved with the Executive Intelligence Review and the LaRouche Movement, and, of course, the panels from the LaRouche Youth Movement. That can be found by going on to the LaRouchePub.com website and look over on the left-hand side where it says the LaRouche Show. So every week we're live with a new updated picture of what is important in the world and what you're not hearing from the media, your friends, or most people involved in politics. If you want some literature or if you want to get a copy of the EIR so you can get a sense of what John is talking about, the kind of work that we're doing, you can call us at 888-347-3258. It's a toll-free call, 888-347-3258. So we are back now on the LaRue Show discussing this question of economic policy and why it is that the reports that you generally see, I think I can say beyond generally, virtually every report that comes out on the economy is fraudulent. Now, therefore, though, when you get dummied up statistics or no statistics at all, what can you look for, John? I mean, we don't have really a Tycho Brahe out there giving us the proper observations, so what can we proceed with?
Well, the most you'll get out of statistics are long-term trends. And, you know, but there it's useful because even the most doctored numbers, I mean, it's as if Dick Cheney is in charge of the statisticians. But even the most numbered doctors on employment, the most doctored numbers on employment and other things, can't hide the great collapse of the U.S. industrial economy.
So, for example, if you could compare numbers of people employed in producing automobiles 1960 to 2006, you'd find something.
Yes. I mean, to give you just a good example of how far we've fallen, if you look at just on the national level, just the number of manufacturing workers according to government statistics, in raw numbers, we're now back to where we were in 1942. If you take manufacturing workers per capita, we're back to the level of the 1860s.
Hmm. Well, isn't that good, John? Because now that means that people don't have to work for a living.
Well, yeah, that's good. You know, people can concentrate more on quail hunting.
Well, breeding clipped-winged quails.
Yeah, yeah. And laundry. You know, there's a lot of demand for people who are busy to have someone do their laundry. And if they do crack down on the number of aliens coming across the border, then there'll be some jobs for gardeners opening up.
Uh-huh.
But the other good news, I heard it on WTOP this morning, is that that now some researchers are saying we should raise the retirement age to 85 by 2050, and that this will have the benefit of making 50-year and 100-year mortgages possible. So I think this is the solution to the real estate crisis.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know if they build houses that will be around in 50 years anymore.
Well, that's okay, as long as the payments are still. It's the mortgage that counts. The house is nothing but a vehicle to provide a mortgage.
Ah, okay. So we've inverted everything.
It's debt farming. It has really nothing to do with housing.
Okay, well, let me go back to Megan with a question then. Mm-hmm. Because you're out organizing virtually every day. How do you communicate these ideas about real economy versus the brainwashing that's taught at such bastions of higher learning and ripping off of parents as Harvard and MIT?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we have a certain laboratory here. You've got the brainwashing on both sides. You have the sort of mathematical economics approach at MIT and these places, and you also have, you know, as it's probably worse in Los Angeles, but you have the counterculture. You have people studying to be professional rock stars. So, I mean, I think the way to communicate this stuff is to show people, not just trying to refute the assumptions that people already have, but actually showing them a positive proof of principle through the sort of work that the youth movement is actually doing on and bringing people into that on what a successful culture is actually organized around and demonstrating that to people. I think it's the best way.
And have you begun to use animations, the first generations that we've produced?
Mm-hmm.
Are you using them on laptops in the field?
We've used them more. We've used them more at the Massachusetts State House, where they've been very, very effective. The ones that were done on manufacturing. I mean, one thing was that you have a situation, you know, in the Northeast where people think small. because you got small states up here, I guess, but where people actually can look at something they thought was a localized sort of trend that actually was something that was going on nationally. And I know we were in the field. We actually didn't have a laptop, but we were something similar to animation, had a massive map of the United States, and we were illustrating the destruction of the healthcare policy, having overlays looking at the past, 30 years, looking at what's happened to Hill Burton, and we were bringing that out in the field. That's something we've been doing since before the election, when LaRouche initiated this call for the animation.
And let me ask you another question on this. You were at Boston for the Democratic Convention in July of 2004. You remember when we finally got the platform and used the LaRouche's Democratic Party platform to organize the delegates, the effect that it had. Lynn is now saying he's in the process of preparing something, possibly what will come out of the webcast. Tell people the kind of reaction we got when we first took this out and said, look, here's a platform for the Democratic Party.
Well, the Democratic Party was pretty much all party when we came here to Boston for the convention. And I think one thing that was part of this platform that was something that literally seemed impossible to the people we were organizing was something in the platform, which is the idea that the Democratic Party had to, I think, nullify globalization was how it was put.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, then this was something that nobody thought was possible. They also didn't think that it was anything that had anything to do with the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party being responsible for getting rid of free trade. So I think a process of our educating people, but also, I mean, a lot of it is really reality has forced people, what you see now. The things going on in the Democratic Party now, the innovation agenda that Nancy Pelosi announced here at Harvard, while what innovation is actually going to be still needs to be defined, from the standpoint of the Boston Convention, the idea of this happening was, it was like literally, it was literally be impossible, but we've done it.
Mm-hmm. All right, you're listening to The LaRouche Show. We're talking about economics and how to give people an understanding of economics. Leona, I know that you and your team and the Curvature Group is in the process of mapping out what seems to me to be a fairly large project, which is building on what you did earlier with the rural electrification. Why don't you just give us a quick report on what you're in the process of doing?
We've been able to work out, as far as the mathematics part of it, that LaRouche has challenged us with, is really digging deeper into Riemann's work on the, essentially what Gauss had developed but never published. And especially now, digging into some of this tensor analysis that's going to allow us to express or deal with things like when you have several quantities that are all interrelated. And so that's been pretty successful. And we're going to take a lot of this stuff, we're actually compiling it to be ready for the Democratic State Convention that's coming up in 2 months. And so, because what we've seen so far is that we've been able to push a response out of the Democratic Party, like things like what Pelosi has come out with. But of course, as far as a real understanding of the implications of saying we're going to go for innovation and such, we've run into on the streets is, I don't think very many people have any understanding of what that means. And so the idea right now is we want to be able to get to the point where we can actually prove without a doubt that one, the this Rohatyn project would be impossible.
You're talking about his so-called infrastructure plan.
Right. The so-called infrastructure building up the California plan, right? And then something harder even than that is to prove without a doubt that the projects that we're offering will work.
Okay. Now, remember, we can still take your emails if you have a question for our panelists at radio@larouchepub.com. Now, John, I know that Felix Rohatyn is one of your favorite targets, perhaps not as much as you like Dick Cheney, although using the word target and Dick Cheney together could be dangerous.
Well, I'm trying to organize a hunting trip between the two of them.
Well, we had this thing happen at the an event the other day. Excuse me, a candidate for governor in California reacted enthusiastically to a discussion of infrastructure, and he said to us, "Yeah, you ought to check out this guy Felix Rohatyn and his policy on infrastructure. What is it that Rohatyn has proposed, John, and what's the problem with it?"
Well, under the Rohatyn plan, we wouldn't actually have any more infrastructure, but we would issue huge amounts of debt, which means borrowing it from the bankers. And so we would wind up with no infrastructure, but a lot more debt. Now, that is an appealing prospect.
For the bankers.
Yeah. Under Lynn's program, we would use government-directed credit to actually build new infrastructure projects and to develop new technologies such that not only would we not have this debt, but we would have a much more productive economy. And so that's the two are diametrically opposed. And yet Felix, because he's such a sophist, couches things in terms that make it sound like what he's talking about is something good for all of us, when he's really talking about stealing us blind.
Well, I think one of the points that Lyndon LaRouche has always made on this is that when you look at what Rohatyn's proposing, which is largely piling up the debt on the states, states cannot produce credit except by borrowing money in the form of bonds, which then have to be paid out of state revenue. And since so many of the states have been at or near bankruptcy in the recent period, the only way they could repay these bonds would be by cutting programs such as health care, education, general social welfare programs. Now, that, in fact, Schwarzenegger, who is a puppet for George Shultz, who Shultz may be on the level of the Armstrongs, but Schwarzenegger made this proposal supposedly for $220 billion in infrastructure. And when you look closely, the main thing they're going to build is a few roads, a few levees, and a lot of prisons. But they're going to pile up tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions, of debt on the state of California. Now, John, why is it that people fall for this?
Well, because they don't think about what they're being told. They have this belief that they can't understand economics, and so they just accept it. The biggest problem with what Rohatyn is saying is that the only way out, if you adopt his program, you're going to see things like toll roads. You're going to see everybody getting charged for everything. Right now in Britain, they have a plan to put GPS units on everybody's car and charge everybody by the mile that they drive. And these are the sorts of plans where you have to pay for everything, where the austerity levels get so high that everything that you do, every time you move, you have to pay for something. You know, they're probably going to start trying to charge us for the air we breathe. And this is all they. This is their plan for the world. And if you adopt this, then you're going to have a tremendous downsizing of the population. This is not just austerity. This is genocide. All right.
And this is. It's fair to say that this is precisely what Rowetten's predecessors at Laissez Faire did in supporting the fascist movements in Europe in the 1920s and 30s.
Yeah, this is what they do. This is, and that's, you know, all of Lazard's mergers and acquisitions business is actually just cartel building.
Well, this is what is so-called economics today, how to create what they call financialization of both production and commodities, and make the money, the value of the money that goes into it, be the goal of the production as opposed to producing things that people need.
Yeah. I mean, despite Enron, deregulation of electricity continues. You know, we're moving ahead with deregulation, taking down all the government controls on virtually every front. And this is happening all around the world.
Well, let me pose this to our two LIM panelists, because this is the world into which you were born. At least John and I are old enough to remember that that people used to produce things for a living. Of course, I never really liked that idea because I grew up as a baby boomer. And the idea of having to work and produce something and maybe get your hands dirty wasn't too appealing to us and our generation. But you guys grew up where industry was bad, science and technology was considered dangerous. Do you think that these views are challengeable? Do you think that these axioms can be broken? Megan?
Yeah. I mean, I know. I remember one thing, just growing up, the idea of infrastructure to me was sort of, it's sort of a old steel stuff that's sort of rusting and came from another age. But it's all sort of stuff. There's not the idea that this is something on which the survival of mankind in this generation and the next will depend. So, I mean, I think if we can actually, one thing that we have an ability to do is show the role, show what it actually takes to sustain a human population and to develop, a newborn child until they're 20 years old. And you can't get around the question of infrastructure and of having at the basis of it, a machine tool sector in a nation. So I think that's one way actually to get it at disproving a lot of this stuff. By showing what's actually necessary to develop an individual, the individual who you happen to be organizing, maybe.
Mm-hmm. John, we just got an email from an old buddy of mine from Northeast Louisiana, or I should say Louisiana, Fred Unifeld, who asks the following question. He says, during the congressional recess, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency gave permission to banks to go into commercial real estate, building hotels, condos, farms. Isn't this a violation of banks going into competition with business? John, you have some comments on that?
Sure. Fred already knows the answer to this. The answer is, of course it is. I mean, the point is that under the current system, the financial crowd is above the law. They don't. If the law gets in the way, the law gets changed. First it gets ignored, and then it gets changed. And we've seen this happen over and over and over again.
Sort of like the Cheney shooting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's an established reality that these guys do whatever they want to do. You know, the repeal of Glass-Steagall, if the law meant anything, Travelers would have never been allowed to take over Citicorp. But as Congress said at the time, when somebody pointed out, but this is illegal, then they said, oh, my God, we better change the law.
Hmm. Well, John, we seem to be getting some questions from emailers now on some of these kinds of economic questions. We have one on Bernanke and inflation from Detroit. What about Bernanke? The neocons say we don't have to fear inflation from the Fed's printing of all this cash because only other countries use our cash, and we use computer digits. How insane is that?
Well, you know, the neocons, their view is money is good, and the more of it you print, the better off you are, right? What could be wrong with that? And I mean, these guys are insane. They're absolutely, positively insane. And most money is computer money these days. We have the Fed is going to quit reporting the M3 money number, but out of, I don't know what it is right now, $10 trillion, $8 or $10 trillion, only about $500 billion of it is in cash anyway. And then that doesn't even begin to count all of the off-balance sheet money that's created by the derivatives market and all of these bets where you have, you know, upwards of officially admitted $300 trillion in derivatives bets, the majority of which is denominated in dollars. So there are no dollars to cover the dollars. And the dollar is increasingly worthless.
Well, we've seen the incredible volatility in commodities prices, which is usually a harbinger for panic of people just trying to figure out how to make a couple of dollars today with the expectation that everything could blow up tomorrow. You're listening to The LaRouche Show. We are talking about various aspects of the economy. I want to get back to animations and pose a question to Leona, who actually is very creative when it comes to constructions of solids and things of that sort. Leona, do you think we can do an animation to show how insane these financial elites are?
It might blow up the computer. I'm not sure.
Well, I don't expect an immediate answer, but I think by tonight you should come up with something.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, essentially, that some of it's kind of easy, in a way. Like people, it's interesting how people respond because most people already know that things are just wrong. Right, but it's really just a question of kind of connecting the dots, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a question of putting out an alternative. I think that's the best one. That's the most crucial part of it. It's just people don't really see, well, what else could you do?
Mm-hmm.
Like if I dump this, what else could I? I would just be floating out in what LaRouche calls thrownness, the feeling of being born out of a giraffe. Right. If you don't really have anything else to grab onto that's solid, then why would you dump what you think right now of how the world works? And so that's going to be crucial, is really illustrating, okay, well, this is how it's worked previously. It's worked. In fact, it was stupid to dump it, and here's how we're going to implement it now.
Now, Leona, did you or Megan study any economics in college?
No.
Megan?
Nope.
Okay, so you didn't have the great thrill of taking a macroeconomics class where they tell you to forget about production. We're going to deal with figures and formulas such as the Black-Scholes equation.
Actually, in high school, I remember the first thing that started with economics was the definition. The definition of economics is the management of scarce resources.
All right, well, we're coming down to about the last 6 minutes. I want to make sure that all our listeners know that this coming Thursday, February 23rd at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the LaRouchePAC.com website, Lyndon LaRouche will be delivering a presentation, a webcast, in Washington, D.C., and he'll be taking up this question of, given the proven moral imbecility and lawless fascism of the current regime and the need for a change, what steps must be taken now? And so everyone who's listening should be mobilizing your friends, your family, your networks, your coworkers to log on to get the webcast from Lyndon LaRouche this Thursday, the 23rd of February, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, John, let me come back to you for some concluding comments that you might have on this question of the direction we're going to be taking with the animation work. Obviously, there are limitations from the data we have, but there are no limitations from the side of the imagination as to what we can communicate. So what are you thinking about for the future?
Well, the problem we have with all of the data and all of the anecdotes is basically you have a bunch of facts, and you have a bunch of facts with which you surround your subject and try to use all of out of that facts. You want the viewer to grasp an idea. You know, it's the one in the many question. And so we have to keep, I mean, a lot of it is just technical improvements of how we can, being able to do things that we can imagine we can do. You know, I've learned a lot about computer graphics, but I don't know half of what I need to know. But as we develop these things in a more complex way, you know, the whole idea is that to make the viewer understand, to really make it sensual to the viewer, to, for example, I can hop in my car today and I can be at the Ohio River in a few hours. But if you imagine what it was like when you were a pioneer and you had an ox and a wagon and you had to climb up over the eastern seaboard mountains and go down into the Ohio Valley, you know, you have a much different appreciation of the need for infrastructure and technological progress. We take a lot of that for granted. But what people have to understand is that that is not a process you can step off of, that you have to keep pushing forward the boundaries of science and technology and implementing these new technologies, nuclear power, maglev, things like this, to keep the economy and keep society growing, that it's advance or die, and that, you know, the life raft that we're holding on to right now, you know, it's headed for Niagara Falls. I mean, you know, not to mention there are a bunch of rattlesnakes on it like Felix Rowan. So we really have to make this leap, and we have to go back to what worked. And we have to, you know, so this is what we're trying to conceive of in the animations work, and then get people to understand.
John, very quickly, the question came up again on an email. What about Bernanke?
The helicopter man.
I mean, he wants to dump money from the helicopter.
Yeah. I mean, he has one trick, print money. That's all he can do. That's, you know, it's not rocket science. If you stop, it's a pyramid scheme, and if you stop pumping the money in, then the thing is going to collapse.
Now, we have just less than a minute. Leona, do you think you're seeing in the population, especially young people, a sense of desire to know more about what's causing things to go wrong? Leona, you still there? We may have lost her. She's using my phone, which is a bad phone. How about you, Megan?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole idea of free trade is that you can't know what's going on. You can't know what's causing it. So the idea that this is what we're offering people is something that can get especially a young person extremely excited.
Well, that's good news for us. It's bad news for Deadeye Dick, who wants the people of this country to stay as stupid as possible. So, Leona, I guess you're off, but thank you for joining us. Megan, thank you for joining us. John, it's always a pleasure to have you on.
Well, my pleasure.
Stay away from the King Ranch.
I'm going hunting this afternoon.
All right. Well, don't forget, this Thursday, the 23rd, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Lyndon LaRouche, the next webcast on LaRouchePack.com. That's our show for today. Thanks for joining us.